Thomas. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at free will and predestination in the words of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
I'm honored to be elected leader of the Conservative Party. Thank you for putting your trust in me to lead and deliver for our great country. That was UK's Liz Truss opening statements on her election as Prime Minister and the party leader. But what kind of country will she inherit? Is she aware of the depth of the economic problems that the UK is facing? And more importantly, how to deal with it? Well, in this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the challenges that the new PM faces and also look at how the UK has fared under the Conservative Party as a whole. First, to get some reactions from what is happening there in the UK, a correspondent from London, Syed Purza, joins us. We'll say at this point the verdict is in terms of what has occurred. Tell us how people there are reacting to this, and of course, maybe briefly about what Liz Truss has said in her opening remarks of accepting this.
Well, the general public is divided, really, along Queen, who thought that Rishi Sunak was more clear-eyed on the economy, as you would expect a chancellor to be, and then others who supported Liz Truss, because of what people would call boosterist economic plans, her package of support for those in need to try and mitigate the blow from the soaring cost of living and soaring, skyrocketing energy prices. But the fact of the matter is that Liz Truss is faced with a formidable task, a formidable inbox. You're looking at skyrocketing in that is almost nearly certainly in recession. You have the war in Ukraine. You have the unfinished business of Brexit and also the Scottish independence ambitions. All of those things with a very short runway for Liz Truss between before elections. Whether or not he will be able to deliver on those is a question that only time will answer. But, and perhaps another reason why she was selected by that small minority of the British electorate, the members of the Conservative Party, that number between 160,000 to 200,000, was that they were looking probably for someone as ambitious as Liz Truss, who could perhaps, in their view, could unite a deeply divided party, especially in the wake of years, and also deliver on these economic plans, as she said in her acceptance speech, deliver, deliver, deliver. We heard that word so many times. Whether or not she will be able to do that is something, as I say, is a matter of time. But also on the question of unifying the party that remains very divided, she now belongs, although a former Liberal Democrat, belongs to the right end of the Conservative Party. Of course, we'll see her announce her cabinet in the next 24 hours or so, and the makeup of that cabinet will tell you whether or not she's a unifying figure or a divisive one. And so, again, on these are the things that really led to her victory. And also, as I say, people are divided on whether or not she will be able to deliver.
Thank you for that. Thank you so much for that. Saeed Pourrizadeh, our correspondent from London. Let me now introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Robert Ulves joins us. He's the executive director at Impact International, who joins us from London. Also joining us, Tony Gostin, historian and journalist, who joins us from Gloucestershire. Didn't pronounce that right.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, very good. Robert Ulves, welcome. Let me first start with you. I was trying to find some positive comments on Liz Truss's nomination here, going through online media, but I was not able to find many. I'm wondering what camp you are in terms of what has occurred, her nomination to be the prime minister.
Well, there is an opinion poll out there which says that of all the possible people who would have been leader of the Conservative Party and, of course, Prime Minister, the one best placed and the only one able to and actually possibly likely to beat Keir Starmer. So Keir Starmer, the leader of the opposition, the leader of the Labour Party, is Liz Truss. She has, to a degree, connected with the British public. Of course, the British public are still yet to learn a lot about her. And, of course, Liz Truss is someone who's been on a political journey throughout most of her life, and it's led her to a position now where she is the Brexiteers' choice as leader of the Conservative Party and the Prime Minister. And, of course, she's connected with many people who are culturally conservative, people who do not subscribe to some of the bizarre views that emanate from certain sections of the society. She's quite, in a sense, conservative socially as well, in terms of having common sense beliefs regarding issues to do with gender. So this is actually some very good signalling that she's done. It's connected with the public, and that's one of the reasons why she is now set from tomorrow to become Prime Minister succeeding Boris Johnson.
Okay. Tony Gosling, I think you'll agree that one of the first things that Liz Truss needs to do overall is, and who knows how she's going to go about this, is to tackle the cost of living crisis. I mean, that's a huge mammoth of a task. Do you think that she is up for it? The correspondent, however, made a good point that she's going to introduce her cabinet tomorrow. But we have to wait and see who she will introduce. But overall, how do you see things?
Well, I don't think she's got really any solutions to the cost of living crisis, and she doesn't want to have them. I think the game she's playing is that she wants to concentrate on foreign affairs, a bit like they do in the United States, in order to try and distract the public from their incompetence at home. But she's definitely not the Brexiteers' choice for Prime Minister. She's originally a Remainer. And there's a survey done by YouGov last week looking at who Conservative voters want. And Liz Truss was the bottom out of the three. They gave them the chance to look at either Boris Johnson to come back or to have Rishi Sunak or Liz Truss. And she's right down the bottom. And the reason that was 18%. Rishi Sunak had a 20% and Boris nearly 50%. So there's a big impetus within the Conservative Party and amongst Tory voters that's saying actually neither of these candidates are better than Boris Johnson. They're looking at the next general election, who they think has got the charisma to win and fight that election, and they believe that Boris has it. Now, Boris has got other plans. The deep state may also have other plans for Boris to go and become Secretary General of NATO, tempt him away from the fight with a big job like that. But the problem with Liz Truss is she's actually not very smart. She's a bit like a kind of ventriloquist dummy who will say whatever is put in front of her. We had a horrible showing of her. This is in the as part of the campaign, at the beginning of the campaign, where she was trying to find her way out of a press conference room, but she didn't know the exit. But she was trying to toughen out as if she did. Now, this is a very... And she looked really stupid trying to get out of this room, but she didn't actually know the way out, and she was trying to pretend she did. Look, this is a very dangerous kind of psychology to have in a prime minister that tries to pretend they know what they're doing when they don't. I don't think Liz Truss is going to be in charge. She will be being told what to do by the financial oligarchs and the people who are really in charge, and her script will be being written for her. She will have something... And she had this, as we saw at the Foreign Office, when she was at the Foreign Office, something called imposter syndrome, where people find themselves in jobs they're not really capable of, and yet they try to, tough it out. They try to, they're basically completely reliant on their advisors. Now, the Tory MPs, by the way, at the weekend, there was a plot revealed in the Mirror newspaper here. There's a whole load of Tory MPs out there who are not happy about Truss winning either. They will, of course, for the cameras, for the time being, saying, oh, yes, we support her, we have unity. They're, of course, hoping for jobs in her cabinet. But there's a MP's plot to bring back Boris in a winter vote. That's what they're saying anyway. Liz Truss is not very bright, they say, and has poor judgment. She has little empathy, and she sees everything in financial terms, which is dangerous. What that means is she's amoral. Her values are financial. They're not moral.
Okay, go ahead. Robert Uhl, go ahead.
She's Sunak, who's an ex-Goldman Sachs man, and as Chancellor of the Exchequer, actually put up taxes on the least well-off, targeting national insurance, essentially a jobs tax, on the least well-off. He was all part of the redistribution of wealth from the poorest to the very richest in society with his lockdown and, of course, the measures which created an inflationary boom, which is essentially, again, a tax on those who are the least well-off. So he was very close to the financial centre, of course, having worked for them and, of course, didn't actually produce the goods for the economy that we hoped. What we do need is somewhat experimentation, relaxation of excessive regulations. We need to get businesses moving. We need to open up the earth to get at the shale gas and, of course, the coal reserves, which Britain has in abundance but have hardly been touched since the 1990s. And we need to become energy independent, and that would be one of the steps to taking the measures needed to reduce the price of energy, which is largely behind the substantial cost of living crisis, which is hitting people now.
Go ahead, Tony Gosselin.
Britain has a major problem in that we don't actually have any proper regulation. What we're seeing now, I mean, over in France, by the way, the government has regulated the energy companies to minimise these price increases. But here in Britain, we just let them price fix. We let them charge whatever they want.
No, we had a cost. We had a cost cap, and it was the part of the cost cap structure was that it was alleviated over time, and it's just the cost cap has been reduced and got rid of at a time. When, of course, energy prices have become soaring. So we do have a regulated energy sector. What we need to do is have more competition.
The regulation is zero. These powerful energy companies are running the show. They are actually...
Absolutely. We need to break them up. Absolutely.
What they cannot do.
Yeah. Absolutely. We need to increase supply. We need of the resources that we have in the UK rather than importing,
well, how much time will that take?
Gas and energy from overseas.
You talk about shale gas, Robert Uhl, aside from the fact that that's an environmental hazard. Let's put that aside. You disagree. Okay. But how much time will that take in order for this drilling or whatever technical approach is for shale to be extracted in terms of the duration of time? Are we looking at the resources being there, A, and B, of course, for it to actually get executed?
Well, one of the reasons why energy is so high is because, of course, there is profiteering from the energy companies, and this is a worldwide phenomenon. One of the aspects we can do is, of course, break them up. But a lot of the time, energy is bought in advance and futures are bought. If we were to send powerful signals out that there's going to be an increase in supply, then the long-term cost of energy will come down. There's also, we can increase exploration in the North Sea. We can increase the number of licenses about what can be extracted. There needs to be a whole set of supply side and demand changes as well. We need a radical reform of how the economy has been structured. Because
forget about green energy. Very well. Let me ask you, Tony Goss.
Yeah, a really simple solution would be to bring these back into public ownership, that run them more openly, and also to have government department. I mean, you know, up until the Thatcher years, we never had these sorts of problems with gas prices because we had something called gas boards that used to sell gas to the public at the same price as it came out of the ground. There was no casino in futures and derivatives and people betting on the price of gas going up and down.
We're not energy independent. We're reliant on a worldwide market and the worldwide price of gas that
let's move on past this. And I'm going to kind of ask my energy question and try to apply it to other areas where Tony Gostin, she comes out and she says, within 1 week, I will make sure that there is an announcement on how we're going to deal with the issue of energy bills. And I'm sure she's got plans within that short time frame of announcements. Why didn't she make those announcements under Boris Johnson earlier?
Well, look, the most amazing thing about this contest between Sunak and Truss is that they haven't actually told anyone what they're going to do. And actually, although Rishi Sunak did make an attempt to do it, Liz Truss has said, well, just hang on, and once I'm in, I will then tell you what I'm going to do. That isn't a proper election at all, is it? I don't think she's got anything particularly important up her sleeve. The only thing which will make a difference is the government beginning to act. And what bothers me is that the energy companies are completely in charge, and the government doesn't really seem to have any cards on the table. If you remember last year, we had massive fuel shortages in Britain just at the time of the party conferences, and the energy companies wanted us to believe that they couldn't afford to pay drivers to drive to the petrol stations. No, they were sending a very clear message to the politicians in the party conference season, who's in charge in Britain. Now, if you actually look at where she's come from, and of course, Russian gas is very cheap. We should be taking that. Of course we should. But she wants to have a confrontation for the Americans with Russia. We don't want to have a war in Europe, a fight in Europe for the Americans. When she went to visit Moscow in February, just before the invasion of Ukraine with the Russian special military operation, she had a conversation with Sergei Lavrov, and he explained that facts just bounced off her. So it's almost like people are waving a hand in front of Liz Truss's face, and there's nobody in. That's because she doesn't understand the issues, and she doesn't feel capable to actually make these decisions at a big international level. The decisions will be being made for her by the City of London, by the big investors, and most importantly, by the people who pay for and fund the Tory party.
Robert Ulz, I want to ask you a question here, and I really to really get an idea from you where the UK stands economically. We know currently there's a lot of factors that have dealt with it, but it's not just the Ukraine conflict that has contributed to this, and it's not just the pandemic, which has contributed to the somewhat of a hole that the UK finds itself in economically, but rather even before that. But are we looking at a situation, when we take a look at the world economy, that is also suffering in many respects? How can this Liz Truss deal with the situation that the UK is dealing with? Do you see a way forward?
Well, there needs to be changes similar to those introduced by Margaret Thatcher, which created a more competitive economy and took Britain out of the doldrums. There was a lot of pain before the success actually started to unfold. There's a number of problems that are indeed worldwide issues that, of course, partly have been self-inflicted by many countries through the oversupply of money, through the lockdown measures, and the economic aspects that they've used to alleviate the pain the government's forced on the economy by excessive lockdowns. There's there's also, of course, there is the energy issue as well, and Russia is a factor. But of course, Britain's not going to be as badly hit as other European countries, and the future that Germany is facing, the immediate future, where Russia has essentially stopped gas supplies to Germany, prevent at a time when they would want to be building up their reserves for the winter. Okay. Means that they, you know, Britain's got a cost of living crisis, and we've got a cost of the energy crisis as well. Right. But we are going to actually have the energy. Should people actually be able to pay for it? Other European countries may not even have the ability to keep themselves warm this winter, and that is deeply alarming, and that's going to affect everybody.
Tony Gosling, you heard when Robert Ould said Margaret Thatcher, I saw you shaking your head right away. Go ahead.
Well, look, because Margaret, what we're doing now is we're paying the price for the privatisation, the putting into private hands of the infrastructure of the country that Margaret Thatcher did. But there's another major problem that Liz Truss has got to face here at home, and this is why I think she's going to be focusing
on energy and these environmental measures.
She's going to be focusing on foreign stuff, because she's not dealing with the major problem we've got at our hospitals, which is queues of ambulances waiting outside the hospitals because the hospitals are full. The reason they're full is because we have messed up social care, that there is nowhere for the care people, that it's very difficult to make care arrangements for people to leave hospital. So the hospitals are full to bursting, and the ambulances cannot deliver their patients. They're waiting for sometimes 24 hours outside the hospital. Now, Liz Truss is going to scrap the tax changes which were being introduced by Rishi Sunak to alleviate that and to sort out this social care once and for all. We do have to have a mixed economy. This is key. You've got to have some government stuff. For example, a National Health Service, I'd like to see nationalised railways.
We're still buying
railway,
the energy from sort of abroad at market rates. It doesn't matter
and I'd love to be able to finish my sentence. And also water and electricity and gas in public hands. This is infrastructure.
Okay, very well. Let me get Robert Ould in. He wants to make a statement here. Sorry to interject. Okay. Robert Ould, go ahead.
We certainly need reform in the energy market, but whilst we have measures in place which prevent us producing, the UK producing its own gas and coal, and has political measures in place which are largely subsidising through the taxpayer and higher energy bills inefficient forms of energy production, such as onshore and offshore wind farms, or of course burning wood chips instead of coal, then of course we will be reliant on importing energy from overseas, which will be through an energy market, and we don't control the price for that. So what we need to do, of course, we need to break up these energy companies, have more competition in the energy market as well.
That's what we need to
There are solutions. But of course, whilst we buy energy from the international markets, then of course we'll be paying the international price, which is high for everybody at this time, unless one does a sweetheart deal with Russia.
Have you seen the record profits these private companies, energy companies, have been making over the last year? They're the biggest, highest profits ever, and this is all going to the shareholders and the fat cat bosses. That energy should be being supplied at cost.
It's going to pension funds. It's going to it's going to the pension funds, which have invested very heavily in them. So, of course, this is profiting from the energy companies.
Go ahead, Tony Gosling.
Yeah, I just want to get one point in here about what's going on within the Tory party. And I said at the beginning about the potential leadership election that some Conservatives have quietly told the Daily Mirror before the end of the year. I think it's absolutely deadly serious. A lot of Tory donors, too, are not happy with Liz Truss being in charge. So in a way, there's going to be, I think, a quiet civil war going on within the Conservative Party to remove someone as they see as too dim, too much of a puppet, too incompetent to actually run the country. A petition of nearly 10,000 members.
Let me get Robert Ould. Sorry, Tony Gosling, because we're fresh out of time. Robert Ould, you have the last say. Go ahead, Robert Ould.
Yeah, there will not be a change of leadership before the next election, and Boris will be off enjoying making too much money as a celebrity and a journalist and a writer and giving speeches. And him and his wife, Carrie Johnson, will be enjoying that, the lifestyle that she would be looking for, and he thinks he deserves as well. Being Prime Minister is too small a job for someone like Boris Johnson, and he'll be looking to do other things. Many people, of course, didn't want Boris to go. It was a cabal that forced him out, and really a media witch hunt against him, where, of course, he broke his own lockdown rules, as did almost everybody else, including the leader of the opposition. But he seemed to have got targeted. But Liz Truss will be leading the Conservative Party into the next election.
We're fresh out of time. Sorry about this.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Thank you, Robert Rawls. Tony Gosson, I'm sorry.
How far can we stretch democracy until the elastic band snaps here in Britain? That's why I think Liz Truss will not last very long.
How much of a stretch can democracy be exerted on when you have four in 7 years a prime minister
in the UK?
Okay, correct. Very well. Thank you so much, Robert Rawls, Executive Director at Impact International, and Tony Gosling. Thank you very much, historian and journalist. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Ikobe Takwe. It's goodbye until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. فَلَمَّا جَاءَ السَّحَرَةُ قَالُوا لِفِرْعَوْنَ أَإِنَّ لَنَا لَأَجْرًا إِن كُنَّا نَحْنُ الْغَالِبِينَ
And when the magicians arrived, they said to Pharaoh, Is there indeed for us a reward if we are the predominant?
قَالَ نَعَمْ وَإِنَّكُمْ إِذًا لَّمِنَ الْمُقَرَّبِينَ
He said, Yes, and indeed, you will then be of those near to me.
As you were with us, brothers and sisters, we were discussing the verses of chapter Shu'ara in which the story of Moses and Aaron and their invitation of Pharaoh to monotheism is being discussed. The 41st verse of this chapter says, فَلَمَّا جَاءَ السَّحَرَةُ قَالُوا لِفِرْعَوْنَ أَإِنَّ لَنَا لَأَجْرًا إِن كُنَّا نَحْنُ الْغَالِبِينَ When the sorcerers came, they said to Pharaoh, Shall we have a reward if we should be the victors? And the 42nd verse, قَالَ نَعَمْ وَإِنَّكُمْ إِذًا لَمِنَ الْمُقَرَّبِينَ Pharaoh said, Yes, and surely you will then be among the near stationed.
So we reach this part of the story. Moses and Pharaoh got into a conversation. Moses showed his miracle. Others and Pharaoh and companions of Pharaoh claimed that it's a sorcery. So they asked Moses to be ready for a specific time of gathering. لِمِنْقَاتِ يَوْمٍ مَعْلُومٍ. At the very same time, Pharaoh sent heralds to the cities of Egypt, gathering all the skillful sorcerers. So now in that session, Moses and Aaron were standing on one side. They had faith, and they wanted more people to know about the truth. And the other side, it was Pharaoh and his rich people and wizards that were standing, and they were truly worried. Now, when the wizards came to Pharaoh and saw that he was in severe tight corner, they thought to use this opportunity best and to achieve some important advantages of him. They said, أَإِنَّ لَنَا لَأَجْرًا إِن كُنَّا نَحْنُ الْغَالِبِينَ. The Holy Quran says, فَلَمَّا جَاءَ السَّحَرَةُ قَالُوا لِفِرْعَوْنَ. When these sorcerers came, they said to Pharaoh, أَإِنَّ لَنَا لَأَجْرًا. Shall we have a reward if we should be the victors? And Pharaoh, who was in tight corner and hopeless, he agreed to give them the best advantages and immediately answers them and said, قَالَ نَعَمْ وَإِنَّكُمْ إِذَنْ لَمِنَ الْمُقَرَّبِينَ. Said, yes, and surely you will then be among the near stationed. In fact, Pharaoh wanted to tell them that I have whatever you want. It is whether property and wealth or position and rank. And all these two are simple for me to give. This statement shows how important it was in that society and environment to be near to Pharaoh, which he mentioned as a great reward. In fact, for man, no reward is higher than being near to his preferred power. We'll be back after a short break. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء لي الدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine.
In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So one of the most important advantages that Pharaoh is willing to give to the victors, wizards who can gain victory against Moses, is that they will be among the near stationed. إِنَّكُمْ إِذَنْ لَمِنَ الْمُقَرَّبِينَ. You will then be among the near stationed. So in that society, in that time, it was really important to be close to Pharaoh. Now, if those deviated people counted nearness to Pharaoh as the best reward, the knowing worshippers of Allah count no reward higher than propinquity to Allah. They count nothing higher than proximity to Allah. Even they do not exchange paradise with its own blessings for a manifestation of His pure essence. Therefore, those who are martyred for the sake of Allah must achieve the best rewards for their great self-sacrifice. According to the Holy Quran, they will achieve the reward of divine propinquity. And sure, this Quranic phrase, عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ, with their Lord, they will be given sustenance, indicates this reality. Also, because of this fact, every pure-hearted believer only asks Allah's nearness and proximity when he worships and nothing else. That is why it is said that the best kind of worshipping Allah is the worshipping Allah for himself and for his rida and nothing else. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله. الله يا الله والحمد لله. الله ولا إله إلا الله. الله
during the reign of Reza Khan, they banned gatherings for Imam al-Hussein and all passion plays. They prevented the ulama and preachers from climbing the pulpits in all the country. They controlled all forms of Islamic religious publicity and propaganda and pushed us back while they pilfered all our resources. It was the same during the regime of Muhammad Reza, only in a different manner, in a different form.
A'udhu billah min ash-shaytanir rajim. We seek refuge from Satan the accursed, and in the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, we start another episode of the program, The Spring of Truth. Welcome to this program in which we try to reflect and contemplate and shed some light and paraphrase some of the sayings and valuable words of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, who is the founder of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. The topic is with regards to training and education. He says, all the divine scriptures were revealed to the prophets for educating this being, meaning the mankind, which, if left alone, will be the most dangerous creature. SubhanAllah, this is so beautiful. To place him under divine training and education so that he may become the finest, noblest, and most superior being. You know, looking around you, looking at the world, you see some people throughout times. Of course, you have the imams, you have the prophets, you have the most perfect human being, the noble prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, who tried to practice, ethical qualities in the most perfect way possible. On the one hand, you have him. On the other hand, you have people, you have creatures, you have human beings who are more base and lower than animals. This soul that we have has the potential to become higher than even the angels, and to become so low that if you want to compare it to animals, then you would be so much worse than the animals. The whole philosophy of the Prophet's coming was to help us become better individuals. And in no phase in your life, you should come to the understanding that, you know, well, this is who I am, that this is me, I'm not going to change. Until the last moment of your life, you should have this concept, this vision, this understanding that I am here to work on myself, to go towards perfection, and to help myself become a better individual, no matter how old I become in life. If you have this kind of vision, then it doesn't matter in what kind of circumstances you are, in what kind of society you are, you will always be ready to change for the better. Thank you very much. Don't forget to pray for us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Italy's outgoing government discussed an energy-saving plan during a council of ministers aimed to save up for this winter as part of efforts to reduce the country's dependency on Russian gas. Ecological Transition Minister Roberto Cingolani's plan includes limiting the use of heating in apartment blocks and public buildings. Italians will be demanded to turn down the central heating by 1 degree and turn it off for an hour at dusk every day starting in October. Italy is struggling with increased energy costs as wholesale gas prices have surged to historic levels across Europe since the start of the conflict in Ukraine. Italy and a few other countries, including Belgium and the Czech Republic, are among those seeking an EU price cap on gas for power, but some members of the bloc, including France, are against this option. An emergency meeting of European Union energy ministers will be held in Brussels on September 9 to reach a consensus on tackling skyrocketing power costs.
We have a big gas problem. Our families and businesses are struggling, and politicians keep talking about making more debt to alleviate the crisis. But that would just be a patchwork. Italy must leave the TTF, the virtual trading point for natural gas based in the Netherlands, and then we can discuss a new LNG strategy.
Meanwhile, the Italian Confederation of Enterprises, Confcommercio, has warned some 120,000 Italian service sector firms could go out of business over the next 10 months.
I costi dell'energia sono ormai la vera emergenza.
The rise of energy costs is the real emergency. Service sector firms will spend a total of 33 billion euros on energy bills, 3 times as much as in 2021. The government must speed up the procedures to access the funds of the EU Energy Recovery Fund and to make sure that the price cap on gas for power is adopted.
If energy costs keep rising at the current pace, Confcommercio, which has estimated that 370,000 jobs are at risk, is calling on the government to extend tax relief and to mandate that bills can be paid in smaller installments. The bad news for Italy doesn't stop there. Inflation jumped to 9% in August from 8.4% the month before. Financial analysts expect inflation to grow further, reaching 10% in October. Max Civili, Rome.
Palestinians have staged a rally in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to mark the first anniversary of the Gilboa prison break, also known as the Freedom Tunnel operation. In September of last year, 6 Palestinian detainees escaped from the Gilboa maximum security prison in occupied northern Palestine. They managed to get out through an underground tunnel in the prison's drainage system. Hamas resistance movement has vowed to secure the release of Palestinian detainees.
On the first anniversary of the heroic Gilboa escape operation, we salute the 6 prisoners. Securing the release of all prisoners is a top priority for Palestinian resistance factions. The 6 escapees will be on top of the list of any future prisoner swap deals with the Zionist entity.
The Israeli regime violates all the rights and freedoms granted to prisoners by the 4th Geneva Convention. The Israeli prison service keeps Palestinian inmates under deplorable conditions. The prisoners have also been subjected to systematic torture and harassment.
Palestinian prisoners escape from Israeli prisons because of the horrible detention conditions. They suffer from inhumane treatment, and hundreds of prisoners are held without charge or trial under the so-called administrative detention.
Palestinian prisoners regularly go on hunger strikes and protest at the regime's administrative detention policy and harsh conditions. Palestinians are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help Palestinian prisoners.
We call on all international human rights organizations to step in and protect Palestinian prisoners. There are thousands of prisoners, including children and women, in Israeli custody. Palestinian prisoners are suffering from all forms of oppression inside Israeli jails.
Currently, around 5,000 Palestinians, including children and women, are languishing inside Israeli jails.
People here consider Palestinians held in Israeli jails as political prisoners and freedom fighters who continue to struggle under the watchful eye of the international community. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Yemen is facing a fuel crisis as Saudi Arabia and its allies continue to block fuel ships in violation of a UN brokered truce and steal the country's crude oil. Yemen's Ministry of Oil has held a press conference in Sana'a to discuss the issue.
There are 13 oil basins in Yemen, of which only two are invested, namely Safar and Al Masila. At a rate of only 18%. These basins are located in Marib and Shabwa, and they are controlled by the Saudi-backed forces. They are continuously being looted, and this reflects negatively on the Yemeni economy. The systematic looting is one of the reasons for the years-long war against us by Saudi Arabia and its allies.
The ministry says the plundered oil is worth billions of dollars, which is enough to pay the suspended salaries of Yemeni employees. It held the Saudi-led coalition responsible for cutting off the salaries as the oil sales are being supplied to Saudi banks.
What the Saudi-led coalition is doing is the systematic looting of Yemeni oil and gas. The total amount that was looted from 2018 until July 2022 is about 130 million barrels, with a total value of about $9.5 billion. This money is enough to pay the Yemenis suspended salaries for 5 years. Unfortunately, they give the money from the plundered oil to the National Bank of Saudi Arabia and not the Central Bank of Yemen.
Yemen's petroleum company warned of an imminent fuel crisis as Riyadh is still preventing 9 fuel ships from entering the country, which is a clear violation of the UN brokered truce. However, the world body remains silent toward the Saudi violations.
As Yemenis face a fuel crash due to the Saudi blockade, they are urging the United Nations to force Riyadh to fulfill its commitments under the ceasefire agreement and to stop detaining fuel ships headed to the country. They say pillaging Yemeni oil also reveals why the Saudi-led coalition launched a war on their country. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Did the UK authorities cover up the trafficking of 3 British schoolgirls who joined the notorious Daesh terror group back in 2015? That is the question now being asked following shock allegations revealed in a new book, which claims that Canadian intelligence officers informed British police that the girls had entered Syria with the help of a double agent, Mohammed al-Rashid, who provided information to Canada on who he had smuggled to ISIL. One of the girls involved is the former UK citizen Shamima Begum, who is currently fighting for a return to Britain under the argument she was groomed by traffickers.
An inquiry has been demanded after it emerged that Canada knew about the teenager's fate but kept silent while the Metropolitan Police ran a frantic international search for the trio. The book has claimed that Canada privately admitted its involvement only when it feared being exposed and successfully asked British authorities to cover up its role. The scandal has now reopened the debate over stripping Begum of her nationality.
Following the latest allegations, we spoke with the Begum family lawyer for his reaction.
Now, the reason that was rather egregious for us was because we had asked specifically the Met Police at the end of March 2015 about updates regarding anything that could be coming of use from al-Rashid, and they confirmed that they had no updates, and that clearly is not the case if what Richard Walton is saying is actually true in this book. This revelation about Canadian Security Services asset being one fundamental element that allowed these girls to cross over, well, that speaks against error. It speaks more to a concerted, securitized effort to have these girls go across, and that's actually true of the Canadians. The question remains of whether other security agencies who were working with these girls, with these handlers of this Canadian asset, who wanted the same thing. And that's a question, and that's why an inquiry is very important.
A spokesman for the UK government said they do not comment on operational intelligence or security matters.
But choosing to remain silent won't be enough to quell the growing questions surrounding the way Western intelligence dealt with Daesh or their sophisticated smuggling operations, which saw so many Westerners slip through the net, including the young and vulnerable. Robert Carter, London.
Iran's Kish airline is back to Afghanistan. Afghan and Iranian officials have welcomed this in a ceremony at Kabul's International Airport and stressed the importance of closer economic cooperation between the two countries.
We're happy today and welcome Turkish Airlines. We have very good relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran and do our best to expand cooperation in the political, economic and social fields.
This airway can be very helpful in the economic and cultural fields. I think such flights will soon be welcomed by other airlines as well, and that makes transportation between the two countries easier.
Iran has always tried to help boost Afghanistan's economy, and the resumption of Kish Air flights to Afghanistan can be considered another positive step in that regard.
Considering the changes that have taken place in Afghanistan since last year, the number of people coming from Afghanistan to Iran has risen, and that demand should be met. This is not enough, and we need to do more, and such activities are very effective in boosting economic relations between the two countries.
In recent months, Afghanistan has been deprived of many sources of international aid and even its own financial assets held in the United States. Now, Afghanistan's cooperation with Iran appears to be vital to the country's economic growth.
Such economic activities in cooperation with other neighboring countries promise the improvement of Afghanistan's economy by providing job and investment opportunities for people and for businessmen. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
On Thursday, Italy's outgoing government discussed an energy-saving plan during a Council of Ministers aimed to save up for this winter as part of efforts to reduce the country's dependency on Russian gas. Ecological Transition Minister Roberto Cingolani's plan includes limiting the use of heating in apartment blocks and public buildings. Italians will be demanded to turn down the central heating by 1 degree and turn it off for an hour at dusk every day starting in October. Italy is struggling with increased energy costs as wholesale gas prices have surged to historic levels across Europe since the start of the conflict in Ukraine.
Italy and a few other countries, including Belgium and the Czech Republic, are among those seeking an EU price cap on gas for power, but some members of the bloc, including France, are against this option. An emergency meeting of European Union energy ministers will be held in Brussels on September 9 to reach a consensus on tackling skyrocketing power costs.
We have a big gas problem. Our families and businesses are struggling, and politicians keep talking about making more debt to alleviate the crisis. But that would just be a patchwork. Italy must leave the TTF, the virtual trading point for natural gas based in the Netherlands, and then we can discuss a new LNG strategy.
Meanwhile, the Italian Confederation of Enterprises, Confcommercio, has warned some 120,000 Italian service sector firms could go out of business over the next 10 months.
I costi dell'energia sono ormai la vera emergenza.
The rise of energy costs is the real emergency. Service sector firms will spend a total of 33 billion euros on energy bills, 3 times as much as in 2021. The government must speed up the procedures to access the funds of the EU Energy Recovery Fund and to make sure that the price cap on gas for power is adopted.
If energy costs keep rising at the current pace, Confcommercio, which has estimated that 370,000 jobs are at risk, is calling on the government to extend tax relief and to mandate that bills can be paid in smaller installments. The bad news for Italy doesn't stop there. Inflation jumped to 9% in August from 8.4% the month before. Financial analysts expect inflation to grow further, reaching 10% in October. Max Civili, Rome.
And think tank showed that
the China Global Television Network and Chinese Public Opinion Institute have conducted a survey in Afghanistan and 24 global countries to assess the 20-year American war on Afghanistan.
Now, the Taliban will pay a price.
At the beginning of its presence in Afghanistan, the U.S. made a commitment to build a stable, strong, and prosperous Afghanistan, claiming it would establish democracy, fight against terrorism, and rebuild the nation.